History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And they don't have to go untold as long as we're willing to ask a few questions and listen to what comes back our way. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as it turns out, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but we really are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. On our last episode, we got to know 99-year-old Jim Parker of North Las Vegas, Nevada, but it became clear that he had much more to say than we could fit into just one episode, and that if we wanted to hear the full story of his most remarkable mission, we were going to need more time. Well, that time is now, and I'm going to add up front here that photos of the B-17 he was piloting on December 19th, 1943 will really help you understand the severity of the situation even better. I have those posted for you at hometownheroesradio.com, where you can also link to the first part of our conversation with Jim. His actions in the cockpit during the mission in question were recognized with the Distinguished Flying Cross, but he had never actually received the medal until decades later. Jim was surprised with it after donning his World War II uniform to participate in his grandson's commissioning as an Air Force officer.
I could still get in my old beige dress uniform. We get down there and I'm roaming around before the program starts, the graduation program. All these generals and colonels put my arm on their shoulder. I'm in uniform with Major. How you doing, son? I had every one of them so irritated me, they were about to kick me off of Maxwell Air Force Base. And finally, they called me, so I go down front, and the gal reads the citation. I'd never officially been awarded a Distinguished Flying Cross. So the female captain, she reads the citation, and I noticed every one of these ranking officers started looking. You know, what the hell's wrong with them? Anyway, I earned the Distinguished Flying Cross. I got everything shot out of the airplane, the controls. I didn't have aileron, rudder, elevator, no controls on it. I didn't have any electricity. I didn't have any oxygen, and yet I'm at altitude. And so it was up to me and God to get that damn airplane home with the crew. We made it home, and of course, we couldn't put the gear down. We didn't have any electric. So we knew we was going to belly in, and I told everybody to get comfortable wherever they were. The ball turret gunner had been injured, but they'd got him up in the radio room, so he was in a safe place. Come in. I swear I've never had the feeling another time in my life. I got to the threshold. I'm down there, and I'm right on stall speed. I told the co-pilot, I said, turn off the mag switches, which kills all four engines. Because there were four switches, but he could, with two hands, he could get them all at the same time. He hit those switches, and it just like we sat down. It wasn't like we landed. It just felt like we sat down. And I swear we didn't slide as far as across this room. And I was waiting for all the metal tearing and the dirt and finally winding up crossway somewhere. So God was really flying the airplane for me.
Well, I've got to hear that whole story. And the one thing I realized, you know, we've heard about your childhood and how you became a pilot and you going overseas. And I asked you about, you know, were you concerned you might not make it back? But the reality is you had to survive 53 combat missions to make it home to see your wife and your newborn son for the first time.
The story I like to tell is when you were over the target, the flak's flying and you know they're going to sic some fighters on you when you get off the target. You couldn't drive a straight pin up a pilot with a sledgehammer. He was puckering so tight. I think that's a pretty graphic definition.
It is.
But to fly an airplane, you got to be relaxed. The key is how quick you learn to be in this static condition and operate normally. It makes the rest of the world's problems look like they're whatever.
Well, yeah, so I want to understand some of this, and let's just start with that mission since you just talked about it. So you were given the Distinguished Flying Cross for bringing that plane and your crew in safely. Yeah. But where were you that day? Where were you flying? What happened to put your aircraft in that shape?
We were dropping bombs on Innsbruck, Austria, December 19th, 1943. Flak was heavy because this is a mountain town. Because anti-aircraft guns were closer to us, so they could be more accurate. And it was black going over the target from the exploding anti-aircraft. They peel off, and here comes this. I got the citation in there with 41 fighters. They hit me, and I can't stay in formation. So they got me for sure because I'm out of formation. I had the best gunners in the world. I said it before this happened, and I said it ever since. Every German that got a hit on us got two hits back. They shot down, I think they gave them credit for 16. We claimed 27 because they were all on us after they got us out of the crowd. That old airplane, it made a believer for sure of God because I didn't have any controls. So what could I do?
So I want everybody to understand how severe and how impossible this situation is. The fighters come. You've already gone through flak. Now the fighters, what made you drop out of formation?
My controls. They got my controls. I couldn't.
You cannot steer the airplane.
I can't. Yeah, I can't steer it. So I got power left. That's the only thing. I learned how to use power flying an airplane for 4 hours and belly it in, and everybody survived, didn't get a scratch in the belly landing.
But the enemy fire had severed some of the cables that would control?
All of the control cables. They got a lucky shot. I had to pay for it.
So how do you do that? How do you bring an airplane, a B-17, in safely when that happens?
Give it your best effort.
And meanwhile, your gunners are all trying to stave off these fighters. Because the odds are they're going to finish you off and shoot you down.
Yeah. The problem is, like I say, they started with 41 fighters. The first pass, we shot down 11. So the second time, it was 30, and we got a bunch then. They weren't doing their best fighting because my gunners were so deadly, it was unbelievable. Of course, they were in the airplane. They wanted it to get home, too.
And you said somebody was wounded?
The ball turret gunner before... He got out of the turret, got a 20-millimeter hit the turret, and it cut up his lower leg a little bit. The radio operator got him out of the turret and pulled him up into the radio room, and the first aid kit did what he could to stop the bleeding, mainly. It was 4 hours before we bedded in.
So that has to be the longest 4 hours of your life.
Oh, I thought of everything in the world during that period of time. I just realized the guy was co-pilot for me. I think it's the first time he had flown with me. He never said a single word from the time the fighters started till we got home and bellied in. But he was listening because I briefed him on the short final there. When we get to this point, turn those switches off. There, the power was instantly killed on the engine, so they couldn't start a fire or, you know, throw us around on the ground. All worked out good.
So you're 20,
21.
21 years old, and you not only are you hoping to go back and see your wife and meet a child who you've never met before, you're trying to make sure that the 10 guys on your plane get to go home to their families.
Yeah.
And you have no control. You can't steer the aircraft.
You've heard of loss feeling. That's the total loss feeling. 27,000 feet. You don't have any oxygen. You got to get down or you're going to die. You got no way to get it down. And we made it. I don't know how we stayed conscious, but I know the co-pilot was conscious all the time and functioning.
I mean, this is like every pilot's nightmare.
My solace was that I know God and he knows me and that he's going to get me home. So I just dealt with what I could deal with, and that was it.
I'm sure you're imagining all the different scenarios, right? I mean, you're 4 hours from where you need to be. You don't know if you're going to make it.
Yeah, see, the reason it took 4 hours, we were flying right at stall. Anytime I got 2 miles above stall, it'd start climbing, and I was trying to get it down.
Yeah.
So it was all power control.
What do you think would be the equivalent, maybe something that other people could identify with that they've experienced? I mean, is that like trying to drive a car with no brakes and no steering?
That's what it would be, a similar situation.
I mean, it kind of seems impossible.
It is.
But somehow
you got to have help, and God was there to help me.
What was being communicated within the plane during those 4 hours?
I bet there weren't five words said in those 4 hours.
Wow.
The top turret gunner, he was watching intensely. He wasn't up in his turret after the fighters left, and he wasn't asking any questions. He knew me, and I knew him. But he finally says, "Do you want me to go back and see what the damage is to the rear of the airplane?" I wasn't even thinking, and I said, "Sure, I really appreciate that." But his weight moving from the front to the back, if I'd have thought, it scared the hell out of me. But I never did think of it till after he got back. And it didn't say anything, but he said, "Ball turret gunner was injured. He's okay, he's in the radio room. Turret's a piece of junk. There's a gap torn out of the bottom of the airplane, so the tail gunner couldn't come forward. As part of his route wasn't there."
Yeah, just air.
And so he gave me that information, and that was the only thing I've ever said that whole flight.
So you lost control of the airplane as far as any kind of steering,
flaps,
or anything?
Standard controls, yeah. All the standard controls were gone.
And you lost your oxygen.
Right.
And you lost radio communication?
Oh, yeah, the radio was one of the first things to go.
And you guys?
That was the electrical system.
So the whole electrical system is gone.
Yeah. Landing gear, for example, it's driven by gear, but electric switch to electric motor. So I knew all the time if I got home with it, it's going to be a belly landing.
So there's no way to manually lower the landing gear?
There is, but we went back to manually lower it, and they would not turn. So something else was damaged in the system.
So this is one thing after another that you couldn't have possibly ever prepared for?
Well, yes and no. Be ready for anything. Cause I was always kidding the crew. Well, what's anything? Something you can't even imagine. Be ready for it. And I had a bunch of guys that we acted as one, whether we were communicating or not. We were always on the same page, and that's why we got 53 missions in and came home.
I know I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but I've heard a lot of stories from a lot of pilots and a lot of crew members that flew a lot of bombing missions during World War II. And I don't think I've ever heard one quite like this, the scenario that you were in where somebody was actually able to bring the plane in safely. Was there a point where you considered having everybody bail out?
Yeah, just before we lost electric, I'd come on the interphone and stand by for bailout. I said, "I'll give you the bail." And, of course, when the electricity went out, the bail didn't work. So they stayed with me 4 hours knowing that to be ready to bail out.
What do you think would have happened to all of you if you had bailed out?
Well, one thing I know for sure, I would not have gotten out. The airplane would have gone stalled and gone into spin before I could have gotten out of my seat.
Because of the lost weight from all of them bailing out?
No, because the controls were gone. The cables were gone. The only thing I had in mind was keeping that dog level. You know, I didn't want to wing down and so keep it level and use my power to get myself down. The curiosity in my mind, of the 53 sorties, I'd say 40 of them, at least, I had an engine shot out somewhere. And I had two sorties where I had two engines out, one sortie where they were both on the same side. I was a pretty experienced combat pilot at the time that this one took place.
I guess.
The old picture is, I was flying A-20. I flew an A-20 in North Africa.
Right.
All of a sudden, I'm put on a B-17 crew. We report to a squadron, and they get the authority to keep the crew. The ops officer told me, he says, "I have you a crew. You're the pilot in command, and I got a co-pilot, bombardier, navigator, everybody, so don't worry about the co-pilot seat." When I got back that day, we had a short group commander, the 301st Bomb Group. And I'd seen him, but I'd never met him. And I'd just gotten out, and I was talking with the wing operations officer. He and I were personal friends. here he come up, and why in the hell did you land it off out there in the dirt instead of on the runway? I automatically pulled my 45 out of the holster and rammed the shell into it, and thank goodness that ops officer was bigger than me. Well, there'd have been holes in that commander, and I'd have been in prison the rest of my life.
He had no idea what you had been through.
It was an automatic reaction. He and I talked it over, and he said, you hadn't threatened anything.
But because your radio was out, nobody knows anything that's going on.
Nobody.
You can't communicate with anybody. There's nobody that can help you.
You can't ask for help. You can't get help. It's up to you. This is the moment when you're it, whether you want to be or not. You don't have a choice.
It's time for our first break, but we'll examine more elements of that December 19th, 1943 mission when we come back. If you want to see what that B-17 dynamite looked like after Jim Parker somehow got it back to base, head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook, and we'll be right back after this.